The Republican Party is visibly fracturing on multiple fronts this week, and it's worth mapping the fault lines because they're distinct from one another. The Iran divide we've already discussed, the hawkish Graham faction versus the Vance restraint and deal faction. But there are others. Marjorie Taylor Greene this week called Lindsey Graham a murderer, which is a significant escalation even by the standards of internal GOP rhetoric. Greene has positioned herself as aligned with the administration's harder nationalist line, and Graham's support for continued Iran strikes apparently crossed a line for her.
The health nominees hearing was a different kind of fracture. A Republican senator, not a Democrat, publicly slamming Trump's nominees over their vaccine positions. The CDC nominee saying she was not aware of cuts to parasite surveillance programs. These are not minor administrative details. Parasite surveillance is exactly the kind of unglamorous public health infrastructure that prevents outbreak situations from becoming crises. Cutting it quietly and then having your nominee claim ignorance of the decision in a public hearing is not a great look.
The Trump administration's firing of Roger Rogoff, the court-appointed Seattle U.S. attorney, within an hour of his swearing-in is the kind of institutional story that gets less attention than it deserves. Rogoff is a former federal prosecutor and state judge, and he described the firing as not unexpected, but disappointing. He's weighing legal action. The pattern here, the administration systematically replacing court-appointed officials, or officials seen as having loyalties to prior processes, reflects a sustained effort to reshape who controls prosecutorial discretion at the federal level.
Senator Hawley, walking out of a Senate patent hearing after clashing with Senator Tillis over drug prices, is another data point in that GOP fracture map. Hawley has been positioning himself as a populist on pharmaceutical pricing. He wants drug companies to lose patent protections if they charge Americans more than other countries pay for the same drugs. Tillis, representing a more traditional Republican free market position, pushed back hard. The walkout is theatrical. But the underlying policy disagreement reflects a genuine tension within the party about how much to use government power to constrain corporate pricing.
Senator Cornyn's comment that the anti-weaponization fund is not dead after the Blanche hearing, this connects to the broader effort to create institutional mechanisms for investigating what the Trump administration characterizes as the political weaponization of federal law enforcement against its supporters. Whether you see that as a legitimate reform effort or as a vehicle for using government power to settle political scores depends entirely on your priors.
The Trump administration replacing the slavery exhibit at the Philadelphia Historical Site is a cultural political move that fits the administration's broader effort to reshape how publicly funded institutions present American history. The specifics of what replaced it matter. But even the act of replacement sends a signal about whose version of American history the federal government is choosing to amplify.
And then there's Vance's appearance on Rogan urging Senate Republicans to kill the filibuster to pass the Save America Act, a voter ID bill. Using the Rogan platform to make a direct-to-base argument for procedural change in the Senate is a deliberate bypass of the traditional legislative pressure channels. It's pressure applied through the media ecosystem rather than through the Senate cloakroom.
The Marine Corps condemning a Florida candidate who called for Trump's death is straightforward. That kind of rhetoric is outside the bounds of acceptable political discourse, and the Corps was right to address it. But it also illustrates how the temperature of political language has become genuinely dangerous. That condemnation shouldn't have been necessary.